Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Michael Bruns, Brian Christofferson. 2 weeks in the book. Nebraska 1-1, two wildly different games. Well, unless there's some like really important banner, we can just jump right into it. I guess, gentlemen, is there anything you want to get to before we start tearing down this Fordham game and then building back up the contest against Buffalo?
I don't feel like I have any strong banter. Bruns might. Do you have anything, Bruns?
I actually don't. I'm sorry, guys. I don't have anything for you.
Well, there we go. None of our teams look like they're going to make the baseball playoffs, so there's that.
Here's one for you. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but coming off of this, there's a lot of discussion this week about 9/11, and rightfully so, with the 20-year anniversary. But they were the BTN documentary about the tunnel walk. Did you guys have a favorite tunnel walk? Not like game, but like the motif that they did for the season? Because it was like there was always a theme, you know, especially back in the day when they kind of did kind of like the cartoony stuff. Did you guys have a favorite one?
The one I remember the most had the parachuting where they landed out by the stadium or whatever. Like that 2007, I'm pretty sure. And then the reason that would be the one I remember the most is prior to that, I didn't get to enough games to really know. You're a rabbit hole guy, Brunt.
I've gone back.
Are a lot of these on YouTube?
I think most, if not all of them are. And the two that come to mind that always make me laugh. There's the one where I'm not sure what year it was. And it actually might've been around the 2001 season, but like, You're in like a plane going over like parts of Nebraska, and then somehow you end up by the sower on top of the state capitol, and there's like this awkward glitch where then like the sower starts kind of raising the roof like this.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated that one, and I also liked the Bill Callahan Blueprints of Championships, where they would have a former player come in and film like they would hit like the logo of the team with a sledgehammer.
I definitely remember the raise the roof one. I do remember also that they had the sower would do the Heisman pose. You remember that?
Was that Crouch era?
It might have been. I don't think I'm making that up. The one Schaefer brought up is a personal fave. When the guys are jumping from planes, because it was a little ridiculous even at the start of the season, but it was even more fun when that's airing like late October, early November in a season that's completely gone off the rails. Yeah. And people are like, okay, that's a little much. Yeah, they should have maybe at some point just been like, we got to pull this off the air. We just got to like have some standard like highlights and just go with that. They used to be a little more cruel to the team's logo, like you're saying, where they would blow it up and stuff. And I think after the 9/11, some of that stuff went away. It makes me think of other teams' ones, and there's all the infamous one with like the Alaska hockey team that has the polar bear. People can look it up who gets in a fighter jet. A fighter jet. It's rough. I mean, he ends up blowing up campuses and stuff. It's a little over the top, but Danger Zone plays in the background. People can look that one up and they'll know what we're talking about.
I have never heard of the famous Alaska hockey polar bear that gets into a fighter jet and attacks campuses.
It delivers. I don't want to spoil it for you, but there's like some space flight involved with it too, from what I remember.
Incredible.
Yeah, you've got a 4 or 5 minute treat coming your way this afternoon, I would say, if you've never seen it.
I'm trying to think if there was a specific game where I was like, oh, they did something different here. I want to like that Miami game in 2014. I think they had like a bunch of highlights of Miami, Nebraska in the past. And I think that one was pretty solid, if I remember correctly. I mean, part of it, Nebraska just hasn't had enough games that really matter at home. in the last decade. I mean, if you were to sit and make a list, you really, you know, you're going to have to start including like the Michigan State 2011 game and stuff like that, where it's like, yeah, they beat a solid Michigan State team that year or something. I mean, there just hasn't been that many good home games. And so sort of the atmosphere kind of plays off of that sometimes too, with the tunnel walk.
I thought it was cool the first year they had Keith Jackson pop up for a voiceover where would you rather be? Lincoln, Nebraska, you know? And then there was one, I don't know that this was a tunnel walk. It might've just been a spring game thing or something. And it seems like it was during the Bo era where John Facenda, who had the famous voice from like NFL films, did a, they used his voice for something. And then I think they played Get Back to Where You Once Belong as sort of a song. It wasn't a season tunnel walk, but I remember that one. And I also remember the year, the off season where Mikey Bo was a big topic. Remember Mikey Bo, the rapper, and he was going to be part of the serious thing. And I think he was for like one game, right? Two games. They kind of had like a mix. Is that correct?
I think you're right. I think it was universally hated. So that's kind of what I remember from it. You mentioning that just immediately made me think of G Herbo and how I just have no frame of reference for anything anymore. And I didn't back then either, because I didn't know who that was when they were doing the remix. So I just recall it was pretty well panned, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I got nothing against Mikey Bo personally, if he's a listener to the pod, but I don't think it went over that well.
If he's a listener of the pod, we would let him know that if he wants to come on the Hypecast sometime, he just has to reach out.
Yeah, I'd love to hear an oral history on how that came together, actually. So that would be fine.
You guys were mentioning Bill Callahan, and I was kind of thinking a great story would be just to get his thoughts on where Nebraska sits now. Just how many questions he would actually answer about Nebraska football before he just walks out of the interview.
I feel like Bill Callahan would have enough good sense to not weigh in on Nebraska football.
Hey, he's got it made. He's the most in-demand assistant coach in the NFL.
Yeah. Yep. Speaking of, I don't know.
Is this transition?
Yeah, I tried.
Zero out of 10 for the segment there. Just we need a straight fail horn on that. All right, I'll pick up where you left off, Brunts. Speaking of football, Nebraska played in a contest on Saturday.
Speaking of football.
All right. So it was kind of an ugly start for Nebraska, but they took control in the second quarter of that game and largely managed kind of throughout. We'll start with you, Brian. What was kind of a takeaway you had from Nebraska's win over Fordham? The more you look at that game, the further you get from it.
That it was hard to take anything away from it. I mean, that's it. I know that's not a good answer, but I was really discouraged the first like 20 minutes of how that game was going. And I mean, there was a play where I muttered something under my breath to Brunts, like, man, these guys are stinking right now, where they gave up like a 30-yard run in the second quarter. And to their credit, they got it together. They found their footing on defense and really made it the game it was supposed to be. I'm still a little skeptical of the O-line, which I was really disappointed in week one. And it's hard to say that about a group when they have, you know, 630 yards of offense, as Nebraska did, and ran for 320 or whatever. But I felt like it was a little harder than it needed to be early on in that game. And I think if you listen to Scott Frost post-game, you heard the same thing from him, where he was talking about, you know, some of these 2-yard runs need to be 6-yard runs. Some of these 6-yard runs need to be 11-yard runs. So I think he was seeing stuff where he felt like they were pulling teeth a little bit more than they'd want running it.
I went back. Gross.
Oh, go ahead.
So I want to hit on BC's point. I left feeling skeptical about the offensive line too. And then I kind of went back and watched the game again today, actually. And it seemed like there were holes there at times, especially as that game wore on, where either the run went to the wrong hole, the read wasn't right, or didn't make somebody miss in the hole. I mean, especially to the right side. I felt like they were getting more done on that side, on Saturday. So I agree. I mean, the offensive line is still very much a work in progress, and I'm not so sure that their best five, they know who that is yet. And at the same time, I think there were also opportunities for bigger plays in that game that for whatever reason didn't materialize, that needs to start happening, because there were opportunities for 10, 15-yard runs that only went for three or four.
I'm glad you balanced out my point, because that's true. And also, the pass pro was a lot better. Now, I mean, the opposition is Fordham, and, you know, you should be able to hold your own. But there were some long-developing pass plays where Toure got open, and you got to credit the O-line for giving Adrian a clean pocket, and it really made it easy on him. We should almost have a segment where, like, 3 days after the game or 2 days, you watch it once or twice and then come back with revised takes, because that's sometimes what happens. Like, I kind of thought this when I watched it, but I thought it more after listening to guys. Like the Martinez miss throw, quote unquote, to Wyatt Lever on that first or second series of the game. Matt Lubick himself said, yeah, Lever probably slowed up his run a little bit on that, and that was a pretty good ball. You know, so that's one where on social media, Adrian's taking a lot of heat, you know, oh, typical, typical. And, you know, maybe it should have been a 50 some yard touchdown if your receiver doesn't break his stride on it.
I think there is something to be said that, like, not to delve into this too much, but like you got to let the game get deeper into it than the first two series before, you really get too upset or too bent out of shape with things. I mean, Adrian played one of his better games. If you look at statistically, if you look at how he played, you look at the throws, I mean, he played really well on Saturday, as he should. I mean, it was a Fordham team, and he was able to take advantage of things. And it's a long game. I'm very guilty of this as much as anyone. But sometimes, like, it's worth remembering that they have to play, a whole nother half, or in some cases, three more quarters. Nebraska really didn't look good until about midway through the second quarter. And then once they started to look good, they looked great. I mean, they took control of that game, and Fordham wasn't going to do anything with it. You had that drive in the third quarter when they got the ball back after the Deontay Williams interception. And this is the kind of drive I was looking for more of out of that game than probably what happened, but they were still able to put up yards and points. They just gave it a Marquise Step seven times. I mean, he had a 19-yard run to start things off. And then he had six more carries, and it finished with kind of an awkward collision between him and Adrian at the goal line, and he needed a breather. And then I think it was either the Chancellor Brewington touchdown happened after that or whatever to put Nebraska up. But I just feel like the way the game started, everyone was so quick to be like, oh, Nebraska's just not – I don't know about this team. They don't have it. They're not up 88-0 here in the first quarter against Fordham. Like, I do think that, by the end of it, people sort of were able to take away, oh, yeah, I mean, they clearly distanced themselves. It just took a little longer than you might have anticipated. So what that actually means, I don't know. But I'm guilty of this, too, because I often think that Nebraska starts slow. And I think that's part of where some of this apprehension from people come from, because if you look at the first 2 weeks of this season and a lot of last season, other than that Ohio State drive where they went down and scored right away, they just don't really seem to move the ball on those first couple possessions anymore. I mean, they did against Northwestern, they did against Ohio State. And then after that, it was like pulling teeth to get them to go anywhere. I don't know why that is, but it seemed like they found it against Fordham on Saturday as the game went along, which is good. It's what you want.
I think we've had two pulling teeth references so far in this pod. I used one and you've used one. So we're,
have we hit quota?
Yeah, that's probably our quote. Your point is really good, though. There is a narrative that gets set right on social media, like early in a Husker game, and sometimes people have trouble breaking outside of that box. I think there's a reason for it, though, in the sense that they've watched enough recent Nebraska football to worry that this team is fragile. Like, and if like if they get behind, what's that going to do to this team? Where basically a tie game sometimes feels like a deficit, A 7-point deficit feels like this huge hill when it's maybe not that huge of a hill. And so that's what's always on this fan base's mind as they're watching this. And they're sitting there watching this game against Fordham. They're like, let's get some distance here. Let's not have this be one of these days where we're, you know, biting our fingernails against the FCS team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think Nebraska, I mean, in some ways has to earn that trust. Right. Yeah. But it's, you know, the possession that I thought kind of changed things in that game was, you know, it's 10-7, Fordham's in field goal range, Dismuke breaks through and blocks the field goal. And I really thought that from that possession on, and I, you know, the offense was on the attack after that quick change. And that was when they kind of seized control of things. You had Martinez hit Toure a couple times on that drive to kind of get the ball rolling a little bit. And I think that was, you know, I don't know what you really take from this game aside, you know, almost 90 guys played, which I think is a positive, but you know, maybe just kind of having that moment of, okay, the game's there. You know, at that point you can either kind of settle in for a 3 or 4 quarter game where you can go in and really kind of, you know, make it what it should be in a lopsided win, and they went out and did that to their credit. So will that help them against Buffalo? I don't know. But I think you have to get a little bit you have to feel good about the fact that Nebraska went in and basically did what it was supposed to.
Yeah, for sure. I asked this Bruns question on a radio show earlier this week, and BC, we'll start with you, and then Bruns can jump back in it too. And I threw it on the message board too. Who has stood out for you through 2 weeks? Give me a player that stood out in a good way and a player that stood out in a bad way. And if possible, a specific player as opposed to just a position group.
I don't want to say necessarily in a bad way, but Cam Taylor Britt is – he's one of the best players on this team. And, you know, obviously there's been the two punt returns. I felt like he had sort of an uneven game, even as a corner against Illinois. In that one, I thought the defensive backs as a whole made it a little too easy for the Illinois when they're throwing it around with a backup QB. I think he's got some great football ahead of him, but, he's the type of guy where Nebraska needs him, like this week, for example, to be that guy who makes that game-changing play that we know he's capable of. And I'm not saying he's in a funk or anything like that. He's had a couple bad plays that were really noticeable, and that's sort of where it ends. But he's got to be that guy who sort of turns a switch and becomes the game-changer now, as opposed to a talking point for another reason. So I bring him up because we all know what type of talent he has. I think he does have some of the best talent of the DBs in this conference, and so it's now up to him to prove that. Somebody who's been really good so far, Damian Daniels. I mean, in first game, Tuioti cited him as playing maybe the best game of his Husker career, and I think he's been what you hoped he would be. He's just a different player than he was earlier in his career, and that's great to see.
Brunch, you want to bring your answers back?
Yeah, I'll get a little bit more specific than I did on your radio show. I mean, I think
I picked up on the shade that I threw at you there.
Yeah, I heard you. I heard after I got off that you accused me of listing 7 guys. I think I only listed 6, but I mean, I think Ethan Piper and Trinor Corcoran are two guys that I was a little surprised have not acquitted themselves a little more through the first couple of games. Obviously, Corcoran not being in for most of fall camp didn't help matters there from just his own kind of ability, but also, you know, just continuity with playing next to Piper. I think the right side of the line just anecdotally seems to have been a little bit more solid than the left side to this point. And, you know, that side of the line, I mean, I think that's where I think they're probably still looking a little bit about, you know, if they have their best 5 out there. I think that's kind of an ongoing question. So we'll see if that gets better, what that picture kind of looks like going forward. But I think I think I was just a little bit surprised that they haven't, especially against Illinois, and kind of seeing what Texas San Antonio was able to do against Illinois in the run game. I was a little surprised that they weren't a little bit more forceful up front. Guys that have impressed me, you know, there was a body of work that you kind of knew that Samori Toure was going to come in and be at least serviceable based on what he did at the FCS level. But I've been really impressed with his ability as a route runner. Obviously, I think Adrian trusts him based on how much they're going to him. They're finding new ways within the playbook with the option look to get him the ball. So I think he's been even more impressive than maybe what I thought he was going to be. And I do kind of wonder too, if the issues persist at the punt return spot, if he doesn't maybe get a look there too.
That's interesting. You mentioned something with the offensive line, and I'll throw my names out here in a bit, but this I think leads to a potentially decent discussion, which is sort of the whole point of the podcast. Do you think we undervalued Brandon Hymus and his consistency at the left tackle spot, or overestimated how quickly Turner Corcoran would be able to move into what is among the most important spots on a roster with kind of having to protect that blind side? Because I think when I look back at sort of my expectation of this team, I kind of just penciled Corcoran in there that he would be at a level that took years for Hymus to get to.
I think people undervalue what like two years or so of experience in the Big Ten means sometimes. And it's there's too much of a video game mentality where, oh, this guy's out, plug this guy in, and it just goes, you know, where it was, and it's going to be the same thing. And I'll say that I would love what I think Turner Corcoran's going to be, but I was quick to remind throughout the offseason, he's only started one game, and he's playing one of the toughest positions in sports. There are going to be some Saturdays this fall where it doesn't go exactly as planned. You just almost have to account for that for a guy who's that young. And Ethan Piper's a little bit older, but you've got two relatively young guys on one side that you're calling on to you know, be dominators right off the bat for you. And that's not easy. So, this will be a big test for them on Saturday against Buffalo, because I think Buffalo's got some guys that can get after the passer. And, we've seen games like this in the past. I can remember Nebraska's game against Northern Illinois a few years ago. Was it Sutton Smith, the name of the guy who made a living off that game? I mean, you got to be careful that there's guys from teams like Buffalo that see this as an opportunity to go in and put like 7 or 8 or 9 plays on film that get played over and over again and do something for their career. You got to remember that. So this is a big test for those young guys to establish themselves, because this is going to be a different animal than Fordham. I think this is going to be a scrap on Saturday.
I think
describing is essentially when the NFL draft weekend rolls around and a guy had played against Nebraska, the Huskers appear a lot in those highlights.
We've seen it.
I think that Turner Corcoran was a little bit of a victim of circumstance in some ways, because if you go back to that Rutgers game, Brendan Hymus sits it out. What's different in that offensive line? Well, you've got Corcoran standing in there for Hymus. Nebraska goes out and just absolutely runs the ball all over Rutgers. And, I mean, maybe I'm guilty of this, but you've got a guy that was a top 100 recruit who is well thought of by the coaching staff, who had a pretty solid debut in that game against a Rutgers team that was – they were plucky, I think is the best way to put it. And Brian's right, where you have to kind of take a step back and say, okay, well, he started one game. He's played in, you know, two or three, and you didn't have the benefit of a fall camp to kind of – ramp up to the season. So I can see where having somebody like Hymus, who's a multi-year starter, there's going to be some hiccups there.
He's going to be really good. I don't even doubt that. It's just that camp thing, we can't undersell that. He was basically out for most of camp, so I don't even know that we've seen him at full, you know, his full go yet. So that's part of what we're talking about here. So I don't want to knock somebody who's going to be a very good player for this team. I'm just saying there's going to be those growing pains. Bryce Benhart had them last year. He had a game against Minnesota that was rough on film that I always remember. And I think he's played a lot better so far. Yeah. I think he's been a bright spot. So if we're talking about bright spots.
Yeah. Real quickly, I'll give my two. For as much as we've heard of him, for as much as he had impressed in the spring and then certainly won the job in the fall, I don't know, and Brunts will be able to speak to this because he just recently rewatched the game. I don't know with Gabe Irvin if it's he's missing holes, if he doesn't have enough patience for stuff to develop, but just a lot of like 2 or 1 yard runs in there. And I just, other than that one 10 yard run he had against Illinois off the 1 yard line, there hasn't been a whole lot that displays burst from him so far. And the running game just looked a lot better with Marquise Stepp, who would be someone I think, you know, he's factored in the Fordham game for sure. He had a big catch in the Illinois game. He has to be better in pass protection. I mean, that was a big moment in the Illinois game as well. But I just think that through 2 weeks, it'd be really hard for me to imagine Nebraska comes into this game against Buffalo on Saturday and Marquise Stepp isn't going to get the lion's share of the carries. I think that, you know, through 2 weeks they went with Gabe Irvin, and now at this point, like I just think that what they've been able to accomplish on offense, it works better with Marquise Stepp maybe as your primary back. Am I overreacting for 2 weeks so far?
Is he a victim because he's the starting running back of those slow starts?
Could be, and that's why I kind of wanted you to potentially weigh in. I mean, you watched over at least a couple of those drives. I mean, was it poor offensive line play? Was he missing holes? I mean, because the indication I seem to get is that that sometimes things haven't been blocked up the way they should, but other times, like, he's just kind of plunged right into the back of his own line.
Yeah, and that's a good question, and it's probably not a cut and dry answer. I mean, I would imagine that as a freshman who's only played 2 games, there's probably a little bit of that, nerves or, you know, missing holes or, you know, not cutting back in the proper place. I also don't know, you know, with the offensive line, if it's necessarily looked great from the get-go, because the first couple series of the first 2 games have been pretty rough for getting any kind of movement up front.
All right. Any other thoughts on this, or we're going to take a quick break here and then we'll come back and hit on some basketball schedules, some baseball news, and get out. Any other things you want to throw out before the hype cast?
I want to save some things in my pocket for that hype cast.
He's got a heavy pocket, Brunts.
I'm good. Let's break.
All right. We'll be back. Switching sports when we return.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. I mentioned we were going to switch sports. Basketball schedule came out today. It feels like the conference slate for Nebraska is going to be a bit of a chore. They drew, 13 or 14 games against teams that went to the NCAA tournament. Double matchups with several very good programs. A pretty tough month of December with the two games that get dropped in there. And then it doesn't lighten a whole hell of a lot up in January. This is Fred Hoiberg's group, which I think we all anticipate is going to be better than the last 2 years. They got a pretty tough hand here if they were dealt.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat in conference play, their first game is at Indiana. Then they get Michigan at home. And those are the games that are thrown in early December before the conference really gets into the full swing. So there's this stretch from December 1st to December 11th that's now pretty interesting, where I think Creighton is in November, so that'll be a big deal. But around that, there's a bunch of games where Nebraska should sort of be able to develop an idea of who they are, but we won't really know for sure as far as rotation and like who can really perform consistently when the competition ramps up. And then December 1st, they go at NC State, Indiana, Michigan, Auburn, Bruce Pearl's team in an 11-day stretch. That's where I feel like we'll really start to dig in on, okay, how is this rotation setting up? How does this talent stack up that looks good on paper, but can it actually, translate to the court?
That stretch, when the Big Ten went to the two kind of pre-winter break conference games, that's always been kind of interesting for Nebraska. And they've actually, I would need to go back and look, but it feels like in those two games, they've always played somewhat decent basketball at that point.
They've swept most of them. Like, I don't know that they've been swept a whole lot in that run.
I mean, it is going to be – that stretch of games will be interesting. It will be a very, very, very good measuring stick for what they have. I think – I hesitate this year to make too many grand pronouncements about Nebraska because you have so many new pieces once again. But you've also had a full off season of actual practice together and guys like getting to know one another and how guys play and where they're good and where they're not. And I don't know. I mean, I was kind of one of those people when I saw that Creighton was part of the Gavitt games and they were going to play it in November, I was like, oh, that's no fun. But I mean, now you probably want that game early on because you wouldn't want it in that murderer's row stretch there.
There's a lot of stuff. If you look at the schedule, it's all PBA for like the first, seven games officially, but if you count the exhibitions, which include Colorado, nine games really. And yes, Creighton's in there and that'll be a big deal, but to sort of, I guess, work out the kinks in your own backyard, and figure out in the own comfort of your own gym, sort of what you have. So that's where the December part becomes interesting, not just by the competition you face, but it's also the first time you're taking it away from PBA. You see how they respond on the road. You see how they play in a neutral site game against an Auburn team. I'm looking here. The teams they play twice in the Big Ten are Ohio State, Indiana, Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin, and then Northwestern and Rutgers. So, I mean, it's always going to be a tough draw in that league, but I would say Nebraska's double down games, they've got to stack up pretty high on the difficulty meter with a lot of teams, I would think.
Do you guys feel like you have a good – I know Brunt says he doesn't want to make a lot of predictions. Do you have a good feel for, like, who you think the primary key pieces for this thing are going to be?
Say that again. I didn't hear it. My thing cut out a little bit.
I stumbled through the question. So basically what I'm trying to get at is, do you kind of have a feel like, do we know who the most important five or six guys are at this point, or is there still a lot to kind of sort of be settled in that regard in your mind?
I think they're going to have to settle that a little bit because, I mean, everybody's going to name off some guys that, you know, the McGowan's brothers and, you know, Lat Mayen and stuff like that. But I think there's some really interesting sort of new additions to, like, Alonzo Verge. I mean, every time they show a little highlight of what's going on over there, he pops up and you kind of like how he distributes the ball. And he was a scorer at his previous stop. And, you know, I know Breidenbach's a young guy they really like. And, you know, so there's sort of, obviously Eduardo Andre has put on weight and, like, where's his game at now? So I think you could name off, you know, 9 or 10 guys who are pretty interesting where it's like, okay, how does this whittle down into who are actually like the top seven of those like 10 guys? And I think that's one of those deals. You could take it like football where you're going to have to play some games just like you did at running back and figure out what you actually have when the scoreboard's on and who can really perform, you know, within the offense that Fred Hoiberg wants to run.
I feel like there's a pretty good sense of like who the top five or six guys are. Like, I think there's some combo of guys that you know are going to be starters and playing a lot of minutes. I'm fascinated by guys who are going to be kind of like 7 through 10. And like, it feels like there's guys that have more narrow roles that are going to be in there for 15 minutes. And can they give you 15 good minutes or come in and do whatever their specialty is? Like, can Tominaga come in and hit a couple 3-pointers for you off the bench? Can Eduardo Andre come in and make a couple nice passes, play defense and rebound off the bench? You know, guys like Keon Edwards, I mean, can he come in and give you some minutes off the bench? That to me was where they were really kind of deficient last year, was you didn't have enough guys that once you got past that 5 or 6 group who could really come in and, you know, compete with the Indianas, the Michigans, those types of teams. So that how that kind of breaks up and the minutes and the roles, I think, are going to be interesting to watch.
All right, let's jump over to baseball real quickly. Bruins, they are practicing. They have a couple scrimmages, I guess. Is that what we call them?
There are 14-inning exhibitions each against, so they're scheduled for 14 innings.
How did they decide on 14 innings?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they play 7, then they break for lunch and come back for the other 7. If it's like cricket, I don't know.
Okay, that's interesting.
But
you got to find out what's going to be served for lunch.
It's probably cucumber sandwiches and tea, I think. That's what you get. Yeah, they've got Creighton and Wichita State. And then the red white series, they opened practice yesterday in Lincoln with 18 new guys of the 41 guys on the roster. So everybody's wearing name tags and hello, my name is. And it's going to be a fascinating fall for this team because you had a group that was so good last year. Now you're replacing at least 2 or 3 starters on the weekend, your entire outfield. You need a closer. You have a lot more innings that have to be accounted for now that the schedule is going to be back to normal. So they're going to schedule or scrimmage 3 times a week for the next month and a half and try and figure out who can play and who can't. And we'll kind of see where things break out. But I think a lot to be settled, but also a lot of young guys and newcomers that they really like over there.
All right. Is there obviously Schwellenbach's a key piece to replace? Is there another critical replacement that they kind of have to find this fall or someone that you anticipate has to step into a different role this fall?
Well, I think they're going to try and let Jake Buns be a starter. He was kind of the middle relief, late guy out of the bullpen to set up Schwellenbach, but I think he's got a chance to potentially start. I don't know. There's just so many guys like in the lineup that they want to see if they can step in because you lost Acker, Foster, Hagee, pretty much everybody in the outfield. And Chase Mason, who was a very highly touted recruit, is out for most of the fall. I think he was a guy that they would like to potentially slot into right field. And I don't know where they're going to put Leighton Banjoff because he was kind of in the outfield. He's playing some first base, but he's a consistent enough hitter that I think they have to find a spot for him. So it's not just one guy. I mean, that they really need to find some answers in the outfield. And, Bryce Matthews moving over to shortstop will be a good thing. But there's a lot of at-bats that they need to fill based on guys that they lost. I really think they're going to miss Acker and Hallmark a ton just for what they did, not only in the lineup, but also just from a leadership point of view.
All right. Any other thing you want to mention on baseball here before we depart?
Not really. It was fun. It was kind of fun seeing Rob Childress around again. You know, he's not, he's limited in what he can do with his role, but I don't get the impression that he's just around pushing paper either. I mean, he's a good guy to have around the clubhouse talking to guys. He can't do anything with, you know, pitching motions or anything like that, but just from a he's a good mentality guy, and you always need those guys around.
Are you saying that Nebraska needs to be pretty careful that he's an analyst and you don't want any improprieties of coaching going on here?
I think that would probably be a wise move, and I also know that Nebraska baseball has always been very careful about the way that they employ various off the field people in baseball. Speaking of Nebraska baseball, Jake Meyers just made a hell of a catch in center field for the Astros. But anyways.
Jake Meyers, a far better major league player than I ever might have guessed.
Yes. Yes.
All right. That is it for us. We will be back with a Husker Hype Cast with a special guest later this week. And, of course, you can check out everything going up to the Buffalo game at Husker 24/7 and plenty of coverage after the game as well. Big game for Nebraska as they try to get on the right side of the ledger and back above 500. We will see if they can do it. Stick around for the Husker Hype Cast later this week. We'll catch you then.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.